extra.
Sales red meat. That's what it is. Red meat that you can take out into the street 1 minute after you hear it and turn it into money.
In a New York minute?
No, actually, Jenny, in a Jersey minute. And today's Sell or Die Extra is brought to you by...
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like?
So how have the studies that you've done affected the... So we talked a lot about hiring and how to keep an employee and what that really looks like, but what about buying decisions?
Yeah, we actually do way more work on the buying decision side than on the HR kind of side. So what we look at, I'll give you some examples. So we'll work with a financial services firm, and they say, we want to get affluent millennials to, you know, invest with us or save for their retirement or what have you. Well, first, we have to start with, what's going to get an affluent millennial interested in even talking with you, mm-hmm. right? You can't jump to the end, which is what everybody wants to do, right? Tell me how to close. It's like, well,
Jeffrey. Let me show you how to open.
So we have to go all the way back to that. Like, how do we drive awareness and interest and then create trust, which is a really big deal. And there's things that people do that they think create trust that don't. I'll give you an example. And this is a great example for salespeople. So we go in and we actually consult with, for example, financial services, auto, whatever, and we'll go into their offices. So great salespeople have sales trophies up, right? They're very performance driven.
I won the salesman of the
awards,
month.
Awards. Yeah.
The number one thing you can do to kill trust with millennials is have sales trophies, because it says, I am great at sales, which means do not trust me.
Ooh.
So if you took down the sales trophies, which is what we teach them to do, and instead you put up customer service, customer loyalty, number one referral, things that the customers actually care about that already don't trust you, but now you're showing that you can be trustworthy, totally different response. Those are the type of visual cues that we're able to uncover in our research.
That's pretty cool.
I love that.
Yeah, so we have tons of stuff like that. So
what else?
Jed's like, give me more now. Yeah, so we teach people like how to present information. So I'll give you another example. So in financial services or all these multi-step sales, there's usually a five-step process, seven-step. You have seen tons of these, how we get from here to wherever it is. And this is true with in-home sales. Just pick an industry. Well, what we found is that millennials are not linear thinkers and buyers, but yet people engage them in a linear sales process. And we've proven this over and over again. So I'll use you as an example, Jen. So if I wanted to sell you life insurance or whatever it is, and I came to meet with you and I'd say, Jen, okay, let me walk you through the seven steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you know, we're going through this. Maybe I do, or I just start on step one. What we know is that millennials will drop out of the process by step three. And you can tell because they're looking at their phone, right? They're already starting to check out. And so what we figured out is people kept saying millennials were instant gratification or instant everything. Well, what our research showed is that's not true. What they actually are is they are completely outcome driven. And there's a difference. And the difference is we don't see the steps, right? We don't see the pathway. We just see the result that we want. And so what we figured out is if we took those same seven steps, and we teach this to salespeople all around the world, if you take the same seven steps that you know you have to do, sometimes even for compliance or in a highly regulated environment, but if you start with step seven, if you show me the end first and go backwards one time to one, millennials will follow every single step. They're massively compliant buyers and learners if you show them the outcome first, but go back to where they started. And this is a really, really big deal.
That's huge.
It's huge. We're not asking people to work harder. We're just saying to be more effective. And the way
actually is more emotionally logical.
Right? Yeah, as soon as you hear it, you go, this makes tons of sense.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So like we use video games as an example. People buy video games for millennials and then the millennials get the cheats. They skip to the end, beat the game, and our parents are like, you didn't win. You cheated. And we're like, high score. Holla. But what nobody talks about, and this is the key for us as behaviorists, is they then go back and play the game from the beginning with no powers. They just wanted to see what happened at the end.
I don't disagree with that. So I'm going to throw one other thing into this. I got a book in the mail today. I get a book in the mail 5 times a week. This one was called When.
Oh, I ordered that.
It's a scientific study of when you're supposed to do stuff for and how you're supposed
it's
to do
Daniel
something.
The Daniel Pink book. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't get me started. The challenge of this book is it's a whole bunch of scientific research that overlooks the word gut. I'm going to go by my gut feeling of when, because timing has to do with the emotion in the room as much as it has to do with what happened 500 years ago in a parking lot. And I think that that is overlooked in today's world of pre-testing, and they come in and they take the DISC test to make sure that they're emotionally adapted to the horseshit of whatever it is. And it's inaccurate because the kid may not be a good tester, or they may be nervous at the time they took the test. I'm going to go with my gut in my interaction and my dialogue with this person to feel if they've got it or not. Mm-hmm. How wrong or right is that,
well,
Mr. Behaviorist?
Mr. Behavior. Well, I think there's truth in both. You know, some people may not have the intuition or gut and really need to lean on an assessment or some other thing to help them discern between people who are fit and who are not. And so there's – like I know you're rolling your eyes, but it's totally true. There's a lot of people –
No. The reason I'm rolling my eyes is they're going to make that to cover their ass.
Well, that's true. And also, depending on how many people they're hiring, could be for efficiency. We can go through a ton of reasons.
Yeah.
It could be trying to get people who don't live in the community, you can't meet with them in person. Like, I can give you 50 different scenarios where that would work. On the flip side, I do think that we have kind of stepped away from trusting our gut and if people don't check every box. So let me give you an example. We don't promote this, obviously, but I never finished high school and I never finished college. And yet, Jeffrey, right? Now, I was a junior in college when I was 18 years old, but I never finished. And the irony is I run a research firm, that academic site, all the time. And I have a bunch of PhDs who work for me. And I would say that my superpower is actually taking academic and other research and making it actionable because I can see both sides. I understand what it's like on the front line, and I understand how to read the data.
You left out the word accurate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can take accurate information. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All of our data that you can look at has a margin of error generally of plus or minus 3.1, 19 out of 20 times. And so the trick for me, which I harp on all the time, is there are people running around, generational experts, and there's some good ones. So I'm not here knocking this industry. But there are lots of people running around saying they do research or have data. And yet if you ask them, how many studies have you led? Or my favorite, what was your methodology and your margin of error? They've got nothing.
Crickets.
Yeah. Yeah. They're online researchers, which means they just went and found somebody else's stuff and then put it on their
Googled
slide.
They Googled it.
Yeah.
Right.
So you got to be careful with that. And people say, oh, yeah, we surveyed 1,000 people. I'm like, well, who were the 1,000? Oh, well, they're on our newsletter. So you represent your newsletter.
Right.
It doesn't represent
right.
anything else. And so you always want to ask enough questions to know. And I say this all the time. If people will not share with you their methodology, be skeptical of the data. That doesn't mean it's wrong, but it may not be as rigorous as you would like it to be, especially like our clients are making big decisions. These are billions of dollars they're betting on a new strategy, on rolling out a new car, on rebranding a hotel, or changing their entire sales process. Like these are big bets, and you want to make sure you're doing it based on real data that you can trust.
So you did a study you were telling us about last night, but I want our diehards to know more about online buying decisions and what leads to clicking buy now and mm-hmm. what doesn't. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So we do lots of studies that look at right now what's the intersection between online only versus physical. So for example, again, this just happens to be the study that's on my mind because we just released it, I think it was last week with WP Engine. We actually found that Gen Z, for example, felt you were more trustworthy if you had online and a physical location.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really interesting. And so you start to see things like that and go, wow, so, you know, we think there's an absolute, oh, young people only want to buy online and better be one click on their phone, which certainly, yeah, we're trying to reduce friction. But the reality is the idea that there's still a physical store, look at Amazon opening physical stores. Like there's reasons for these types of things actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
So there's certainly that. And then what we see in the very near future is going to happen is websites are going to self-create. And what I mean by that is right now when we go to a website, which, you know, just in simplistic terms, we type in a URL or however you get there, and you pull up whatever, you know, Jeffrey, we pull up your website, right? Which I think is Gittimer.com. Is that right? So I go on Gittimer.com, and let's pretend that it was kind of on the leading edge of websites today. So it would read my cookies and whatever other stuff it could find, and then it would present me with content and options that are somewhat specific to me. That's why people get remarketed. You know, Jen, you looked at some red shoes and it follows you for a month. The problem with that is it's very limited and it's often not accurate. Like, you bought the red shoes somewhere else, but you're still seeing the red shoes. So the future of the web, websites won't exist in the way they are now, but they're going to be self-created. So all three of us could go to Gittimer.com and we would see a completely different website. The website would literally build itself to us in the not very distant future. And then when you see it really kind of slide together with how phones work, I mean, it's going to be absolutely wild. Well, you say scary. I think it's incredibly exciting. So make my life easier. But as we kind of think about this, some of the other things to get people to buy, we look at the role of videos. Millennials don't want to read in general. So video is incredibly important to us. Incredibly important. And where does that fit on the page? What's the right messaging and positioning? So we'll see people all the time try to market to millennials or Gen Z, but yet they have the completely wrong representation of life stage or what they look like. I mean, it's really kind of mind-boggling how people get stuck in this.
Keep in mind that as older, mature, wise people from my generation, we look at the new thing and go, holy crap, that's really cool. And that's why I made the statement of the way I looked at it. I think you have to understand that the merchants, the retail merchants who are having major struggles right now, mm-hmm. closing by the thousands around the country, the ones that are going to survive are the ones that say, well, it's out of stock right now, but I can order it for you online and deliver it to your home for free. Mm-hmm. Walmart started that, by the way, just to keep it clear. But we were in J. Crew the other day, Gabrielle and I, and she's trying on this thing and they had an 8 and a 12, and she's a 10. So the guy said, well, I can get it for you right now online. And goes right online and adds it to our bill, and we're done. Mm-hmm. It comes here 2 days later.
J. Crew is really good at that. They've been doing that like now for years.
It's a smart way of doing it. So when I see this stuff, I'll go in there, and if they don't have it, they're going to find it for me.
Yeah, and it's really interesting by category. So Nordstrom's does some really good stuff like that for me, mm-hmm. as well. But what's funny is these are kind of more expensive brands. Walmart has absolutely crushed it with curbside pickup. I mean, click and pick up is just – it's such a big deal in the grocery space because we work in that so much. And it's fascinating that what people don't think about though, and this is always overlooked because we study it so much. When I go to order at – let's just pretend the grocery store where I happen to live in Austin, Texas, I make my order online. Well, the next time I go to make the order, my order's already saved.
Oh, yeah.
So all of a sudden now, I've actually stopped sampling. I've stopped all the last minute spontaneous purchases waiting in line.
You don't have to think about what do I need.
Exactly. And what's going to happen, because we just looked at investing in a company that does this, they are so good now at predicting what you need, they will actually be able to predict it ahead of you. And which is really – now, these are not traditional groceries. These are some cool AI stuff we're working on. But just the idea that so many things we buy consistently. But what actually happens is your selection starts to really shrink because you're not bumping into things. You're not seeing the specials on the end cap. You're not seeing somebody to, you know, try my new wine. And so all of a sudden now what you're going to have happen is they're going to try to push trial – this is what we predict – through the app, right? Or they're going to have to put it in your bag. Right, because people aren't getting out of their car. Oh.
But can't they say something like, well, you liked these cookies, so you might like these too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and so like, let's take that as an example. So let's pretend, Jen, that you like these cookies, and then it recommends some other cookies. What we know for a fact with millennials and Gen Z, their risk aversion – millennials are very risk averse. Gen Z is just conservative with their money. What we see is they tell us, for example, numerous categories, they won't do trial unless it's inexpensive. And so what does inexpensive mean? It could be a sample or like it could be a small bottle versus a regular bottle. There's all these things you have to do to reduce it because just because it's recommended, if I don't fully trust it, then I don't know I'm going to buy it. We like Netflix because we've used it so much and it learns so quickly. And, you know, people just go on there and all this. And that's why people get mad. Like, when Raya uses my Netflix, you know, because we have a family thing, I'm like, Raya, it's recommending cartoons to me. Like, you got to stop this. You're messing up my algorithm.
There's Raya's login. Raya needs a login.
She has her own.
There
Hold
you
on
go.
A second. Recommending cartoons is not a bad thing. I'm a SpongeBobber myself.
He really is.
Yeah, but I think within all of this are tremendous opportunities. And and it all starts with being aware there are generational differences. We got to get to what the real differences are. And if you choose to leverage your own strengths in that direction, I mean, the opportunity is tremendous, absolutely tremendous.
I'm going to tweet something. The world is not bigger. It's wider. And the selection process that they give you now is so immense sometimes that you actually are befuddled mm-hmm. by what should I do? Because mm-hmm. I can go to a movie theater that doesn't have a movie. It's got 12 movies. Mm-hmm. And so I have to think, oh, crap, do I want to go to this one or do I want to go to this one? Mm-hmm. And then I'm asking the guy at the ticket booth, have you watched them? Mm-hmm. Which one do you like the best? Because I don't want to make a wrong decision. I want to make a decision that's best for me, but there's so many choices, I don't know which one to pick.
Yeah, well, so let's look at that. Let's break that down a bit. So now, use your exact example, because this is the kind of thing we study. You went to a movie theater in a certain part of town, probably. They have 12 screens or 12 features showing. And then you ask the person, which one do you like? Here's the irony in that. I guarantee you the person that's selling you the tickets probably doesn't have the same taste that you do, right? Probably is in a different life stage. I mean, we could go through a whole bunch of things that would make them different. But their proximity to the decision has now influenced you because you got nobody else to talk to,
exactly.
Right?
And they may be a moron.
Wait a minute. Well,
I wasn't saying that.
But at dinner last night, you asked our waiter which one he liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you went with his. Uh-huh. And you guys are totally different.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is I'd already decided salmon because remember when we walked in, they showed us on the grill the salmon thing. So I'd already decided salmon. And then he reinforced that decision, which is pretty funny.
Oh.
I was actually looking at both yours. Now, we know too, and this has been proven tons of times, as people go to restaurants, we're much more open to trying new things. And the more you go to the same restaurant, the more you order the same thing over time.
Totally.
Right?
You know what
they
you
can
want
predict my
before
order
you
before,
get there.
Yes.
And the waiter, like an idiot, goes over the specials rather than say, do you know what you want?
Right. But here's the trick to that. There may be something on the menu that you actually like more.
Nah.
But but the funny part is you won't try it because the risk has suddenly gone up. I'm now here. I can go with something I like. I rated an 8 out of 10. There might be a 10 out of 10, but this one could also be a 4. And so people start to become more risk averse once they have good experiences like that. So there's all these cool things that we look at around saving and investing and decisions in relationships. I mean, there's so many cool stuff. And generations, I want to make sure and say this. Generations are not boxes that all of us fit neatly inside. It doesn't work that way. But what generations absolutely are is they're incredibly powerful and predictive clues that help us to faster connect with and influence people of different ages. And if we use them as a way to fast track some of these relationships, kind of get towards connection influence, we can use them in any industry, in any scenario, helps us as parents and grandparents, helps us in work, helps us in sales, you know, and that's where they are. Clues, not a box. And I think that's what we want to, you know, make sure to mention.
This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to the GittimerLearningAcademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to GittimerLearningAcademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher. And come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.